This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Get in on the best investment on Wall Street at the Women in the Making Health and Social Summit for Girls ages 11 to 19, held right here at WBAI Studios on Wall Street. On Saturday, June 25th, from 10:30 to 2 p.m., we'll have breakfast, lunch, and a Q&A with the Women in the Making Shiro panel, addressing emotional, nutritional, and physical health, plus goodie swag bags with fabulous gifts from Manic Panic, Eden Body Works, and more. Raffles from WBAI's Gary Knoll and Natalie Tandaway, plus items from Natural Gourmet Institute, autographed cookbooks, family packages for Pilates and martial arts, and more. On Saturday, June 25th, get in on the best investment on Wall Street. Seating is limited and advance registration is required. Visit brownpapertickets.com and search Women in the Making Health and Social Summit for Girls.
On June 22nd at 7 p.m., join Elwin for the Arts for an important panel discussion entitled Detained Without a Cause, Muslims' Stories of Detention and Deportation in America After 9/11. The discussion is titled after a book of the same name. A compilation of oral stories written by author and academic Irem Shayk. Shayk will be joined that evening by New York City attorneys who have formerly represented detainees. Elwin for the Arts is located on the fourth floor of 16 Beaver Street in downtown Manhattan. For more information on Elwin for the Arts and this event, please visit elwinforthearts.org or call 646-732-3261.
Night Shift.
The Museum of Contemporary African Diasporan Art will be hosting the eight-day series event of the Soul of Brooklyn Art and Culture Festival. Come celebrate the bountiful events of African drumming and dance, arts and crafts, wholesome cuisines, and live cameo performances from Grammy-nominated singing duo Les Nubiens. Make sure that you mark your calendar for these cultural excursions between June 18th and June 25th, 2011. For more information, log on to www.mocada.com or soulofbrooklyn.com for event dates and scheduled performances. Admission is free. Otherwise, check the Soul of Brooklyn website for further details.
Night Shift.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover.
This is Saul Williams.
And this is Michael Frank from Spearhead.
And this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
And this is Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Rainbow Push Coalition. Please call and support WBAI, non-commercial, peace and justice radio in New York.
People moving out, people moving in, why? Because of the color of the skin.
Still works.
Yeah, exactly. If anything still works here.
It's Night Shift, I guess.
Night Shift.
I need more power.
Hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
How long has it been since you've slept?
I don't know. Funny. I never seem to get tired. But I know I haven't slept since this thing began.
I'm talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I know.
Night shift again. I'll be damn late.
It's time.
The 70 billion people of Earth, where are they hiding?
Thank you. When we are with 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 you, as we are with you now, there is nothing, nothing that we are more focused upon than that which you are. But simultaneously, like the wave of a radio, we are focused into nothingness. We are focused into all things. Contemplate. There is a radio station broadcasting radio frequency. There are many radios, and the music or the voice is equally received by all of them. That is the way we are focused upon you. But we do not worry. We are not bound by thought, because when we are not with you,
we think of you.
We love you. But we don't think of you.
I have a friend. Say your night. Say your night.
Like the wave of a radio. We are focused into nothing. We are focused into all things. Contemplating. There is a radio station broadcasting.
Radio station. Broadcasting.
Of bees and flowers is one of the most beautiful co-evolutionary relationships we have. Bees are the legs of plants.
Beekeepers, they are chosen by bees.
You can brush by mustache. And they like.
If bees left this world, I wouldn't like it, because there would be no honey. Yeah, and no fruit.
Colony collapse disorder is the bill we are getting for all we have done to the bees.
If we didn't have bees to pollinate our crops, we'd have to eat just bread and oatmeal, you know, all the time, and a couple of nuts.
If bees are dying, birds will be dying, plants will be dying.
We could call it colony collapse disorder of the human being, too. Steiner's prediction has come true.
So many of the problems we face come down to one thing, and that is monoculture.
The bees can't even live there. They'll starve to death.
From the point of view of nature, it's insane.
We've bred a race of super mites with every new chemical we throw at them.
Pesticides came from warfare, and of course they instantly kill the pollinators.
When you see an airplane spraying, there's this tremendous feeling of not being able to do anything. I really don't want to lose them.
I'm really finding out why I'm beekeeping is to keep that going for my children's children.
Our very lives depend on beekeeping. The bees sort of let me know, go ahead, we'll help you. Honeybee sanctuaries are springing up like mushrooms in this country.
And they're coming closer. Only in the Bronx, baby, are you going to find a swarm.
You see the little antennae? It's lovely.
Oh, look at this. Dripping with honey.
People say that they can't keep bees. They're lying.
What you just heard was a trailer for a new film that just came out actually last week called Queen of the Sun. And it's one of those films that is definitely in Night Shift territory because it truly is, life is like science fiction. And I have to say, at this stage of watching films and being a film critic, I've seen, and especially in the last year and a half, because I'll reveal to the listening audience, I'm making a documentary. I'm now, over the last year and a half, been absorbing. I see every documentary I can. And after a while, there's a cumulative effect. The thing about documentaries is that they can focus on something or some aspect of culture or nature or an event and really go into detail, sort of like investigative journalism or maybe anthropological if it's about human beings. And more I see these documentaries that document some aspect of nature or the world and what's going on. And, you know, there are certain patterns you begin to see, you know, in terms of what human beings have done to themselves and to nature. We've discussed it here on the show, and one of the things we used to discuss was, or we discussed when it was first breaking in the news, was the bees and what they said in the trailer, the colony collapse disorder. And this movie, Queen of the Sun, I think, there's probably, I could put together a program of like six essential films for all humans to see, and then you have a good perspective of the way. I'd like to force Elena to watch them and tie her up and see if, you know, if her perspective is still the same as she's had. But that being said, I do have an interview with the director of that film that I didn't get to play last week because we ran out of time, as it were. But I do want to play this morning. And we also have an interview with the director of another very interesting film. Film, Chris, I know you would want to see. Yep. When I tell you the premise, yes, and you will love the just hearing it. And there's a moment in the interview where, you know, everything you've been doing with your film can be completely justified. Let's just put it like that. So there it is. This is not, what's that? I'm dropping a ball on you.
Wait, just give me a little more.
No, I give you nothing. You must stay tuned.
Is that what David Guy Levy?
David Guy Levy, yes, the guy who made the first flip camera film. But the interview I did with him is very interesting, very enlightening, and you need to see the film. Do you know anything about it, Elena?
No, I do not.
See, this is why you're on the show.
Why do you look like a speed bump?
That's right. I'm very excited to get as much information as we can get on the bees.
Let me tell you something.
Something
let
very
you
important.
Have, you know, hopefully, you know, it's funny because you ask people, what do you know about the bees? Oh, you know, they know a few basic. No, I know, I heard they're dying or something. They don't know why. And everybody tries to piece together pieces of information. This documentary lets you know what the deal is from, and as much as we know. And so, like everything else, there's always hope. There's hope. It's not too late yet. But I must say, you know, the Mayans, what did they know? I keep coming back to that. But Elena?
Yes?
We'll be doing the show until oblivion. And you can be optimistic.
I will be optimistic.
Are we on the air? Chris, you have a calendar? You have 2012. Are we on the air the 21st of December? We should find out whether we're going to be on.
Oh, right before. I can look at it.
That's the day.
I can look at a calendar.
You look at a calendar while we are getting things ready.
I can look that up and I can let you know.
Let me know sometime during the show if you can.
Wow. I can let you know relatively quick here.
Right. Look, Chris is completely out of here. And how are you, Elena?
I'm good. How are you?
So, and I also, I just want to say for those listening, not only do we have coverage of those two films, I have reviews of Green Lantern, Cars 2, and I have tickets for Green Lantern, Elena, who didn't go last week after going on about how much she wanted to see
it. I did want to see it.
Byron went. Byron was there with his sons. So,
what's the date in 2000? December what?
21st,
man.
Yeah, 12/21/12.
Yes, what day is
right.
that?
Okay, well, here's the deal. That's a Friday.
Oh, all right. Well, we're on the
before. We're on the 17th.
Perfect.
So we got 5 days before the end of the world.
We'll have a kit by then.
Pearl Harbor.
We'll have a kit by then. We'll have our 12/21/12.
We're
kit.
On December
Pearl
17th.
Day.
No, December 17th.
No, not Pearl Harbor, you fool.
Yeah, December 17th.
Oh, 17th, well, Pearl Harbor, that's right, true, yes, yes.
No, the 7th, we're on the 17th.
I stand corrected.
Please stand corrected.
Well,
seriously,
I thought you were talking about the 21st. So, Elena, I have another one story for you, and if Monroe's listening.
I know, please don't, because we're going to get the calls.
Why, did Monroe send her a love note?
And I have a story for you, too, Chris.
No, he made fun of it.
Do you know anything about Bitcoins?
I know everything about Bitcoin.
All right, well, I have a Bitcoin story.
I know quite a bit, and I know there was a big Bitcoin heist.
Yeah, well, actually, we're going to cover that here. We're going to cover that here.
But Bitcoin is a crazy, makes no sense kind of currency business, but it makes every sense.
We shall go there. And do you know about the deer with wings, Elena?
That I don't know about.
No, I don't know about that.
Mike, did you
hear
about
that? Sounds interesting. I would like to read that.
Did you hear about the guy that urinated in the water supply in Portland, and they caught it on film?
No, but why do human beings have access to the water
supply? No, but listen to this. He urinated in the water in Portland, and as a result, they drained the complete water supply.
That's intense.
And then they filled it back up again.
Well, that's
$35,000 to drain the water supply.
That's a new type of terrorism.
But they actually caught this guy on film. They had the surveillance, and they showed it to police, and they showed it all on the internet. It's a big thing on the internet.
The PP terrorist. Well, I'm going to play this interview so we can get to other lives. But keep this in mind.
Yes.
The bees.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm really looking forward to this.
With the sponsored radio, WBAI, and I'm speaking with the writer-director of a new amazing documentary called Queen of the Sun, Taggart Siegel. Taggart, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, let me ask you a question, because those who have been listening to my late-night show know that I've been following the story since it first broke, and, you know, just talking, we've had shows where we've discussed the whole topic. How did you first hear about what was happening with the bees, and what was your knowledge of bees prior to doing this documentary?
Well, prior to the making the documentary, I didn't really know too much. Even though I made The Real Dirt on Farmer John, which was about an organic, biodynamic farmer, and actually there's a great scene in the film where Farmer John dresses up as a bumblebee, and it's a music video, and he's being sprayed by pesticides. And it really didn't dawn upon me this was 2005, 2006, that bees were so important. It wasn't until I read an article in, I think it was E, the environmental magazine.
Yes, I know it well.
Yeah, and it quoted, it said the colony collapse disorder, bees are disappearing and it's catastrophic. And there was a quote from Einstein that said, if bees die out, on the surface of the earth, then man has 4 years to live. And even though that has been disputed whether Einstein said it or not, wow, it was a wake-up call. I picked up that camera, literally the next day, and I said, this is my next film that I'm going to dedicate, you know, 3 years of my life to. And of course, that came at a very daunting time, 2008, when with the, you know, the collapse, the economic collapse, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have to say, there's so many aspects to this film and to what this knowledge is, that it reminds me of, you know, what an amazing medium film is, that it can, you know, this may be a way, this is a film that I think is important enough and dealing with an important enough issue that it could change some things, hopefully. I don't know, I have to ask you, what are your goals for this film, having made it and spent all this time with it?
Well, really, you know, I made it dedicated to help save honeybees. And I really was feeling very strongly that if we can't fall in love with the bees or at least appreciate them deeply, then I failed as a filmmaker.
Mm.
My main goal was an audience needs to not get it only on an intellectual basis. They have to get it in their heart and their soul, and to awaken people up to the fact that we are part of nature, and nature is in our right outside our door. Without the pollinators, the world will really crumble. And I say that without, you know, there's a lot of truth behind that, because every plant on this earth almost needs some pollinator that's going to be doing that. And if we don't have that golden thread, as Johannes Wirth says in the film, like if you don't have that bee that goes from flower to flower, a lot of things will start disappearing.
Well, just for the benefit of those who don't understand, can you encapsulate what is the role of the honeybee, and how is it that they could have such a huge impact on human beings, and most people have no idea?
Yeah, it's amazing how the honeybee contributes to our crops. And out of the 100 crops, this was in the United Nations recently, they released a report, and they said, you know, out of the 100 crops that provide 90% of the world's food, 70% are pollinated by bees. And, you know, if the decline of the bees could signal a possibility of a food crisis, a global food crisis. And Gunther Hawk in the film even says it's more important even than global warming, because without pollinators, then things will really fall apart.
And very quickly.
Yeah, so, you know, bees, they say one in every four bites we eat is contributed to bees, but it's much more vast than that, because the ecosystems need pollinators to keep those forests alive and keep the plants alive, because the birds would die out without the plants. And I think the remarkable thing about a bee is that a pollinator, it could take that one seed, that single seed, and turn it into millions. And that's the act of pollination, you know, and that's what I found making this film, that there were companies, as you know, like Monsanto, that own seeds that don't reproduce, that they're only, you know, earmarked for one life cycle, and that they control those seeds so they're not going to reproduce like the millions that pollinators could do. So that's kind of a scary kind of thought.
Well, what's also scary, and I guess, you know, seeing so many documentaries covering so many aspects of what our modern society and culture has done, is doing, and what's going on, you know, the same story, the same theme is that we commoditize everything, and in that effort, we don't really think about the long-term, you know, effects of taking this thing and finding a way to make even more money with it. I also noticed in your documentary, I got a very, very deep knowledge of the bees and their role and the effect they can have on, especially the individuals. The beekeepers were amazing. But I also noticed, and I wanted to ask you, none of the corporations that are in a position to make changes, whether it's the pesticide companies or the companies that are controlling a lot of aspects of what's going on, were in there. Did you approach any of them? Was that something that you thought needed to be covered?
Well, I really wanted to avoid approaching Monsanto and places like that. I think that it's really good for other filmmakers to go knock on the doors. Michael Moore could go do that, knock on the doors of Monsanto. Indirectly, I'm speaking about what Monsanto's effects on bees are, because we see 740,000 acres of monocultures of the almond trees, and even though it's not Monsanto, it's a system that's in place with the pesticides that we put on the land. And so that was painful enough for me to see, like, you know, trucked bees trucked out to these monocultures in Central Valley to this almond and fed genetically engineered corn syrup. And all these things were really devastating. So for me, I didn't want to make that kind of political documentary that's just going to kind of knock us down on a soul level. And so I really believe that let's highlight these amazing beekeepers from all over the world.
Yes, they were.
And let's tell their story. And a lot of them you could never find anywhere because they're so amazing. I mean, you know, just see that coming forward. And then landed 10 feet away from the rooftop on another tree. And it was just like this miracle. Like, of all places, I hadn't ever seen a swarm, you know, in motion. And it was in the Bronx that I saw it. So there is a lot of life force that's in these cities. And I'm seeing it in Chicago. There's registered like 8,000 beekeepers there, close to 8,000. Portland, Sam Adams is a beekeeper, the mayor. And you're just seeing this renewal. And it's not all, you know, older bearded men. It's like a lot of young generation that's, you know, picked up the smoker and they're in there becoming beekeepers.
Well, you're right. It was very inspirational to see. Another thing that occurred to me watching your film, because like I said, I felt, you know, you did a terrific job of showing these beekeepers and understanding the hive. But, you know, as you stand back from it, you know, and I guess that's what I thought was part of the beauty of not only your film, but the message of the bees, you know, what they are telling us, you know, what are the bees telling us? And what they're really telling us is to take care of the earth and keep it beautiful, you know, because that's what they need. They need it, and they need to have these beautiful flowers and plants and need us to take care, and they'll do their part if we do ours.
Yep, we have to rally around the bees. You know, we need to rally around bee vitality, you know, to turn it into a rich ecosystem that supports the immune system of the bees, and it'll support our immune system too. So the bees have a lot to teach us. I mean, they've been around for over 100 million years. We've been around a lot less than that, and they teach us that, you know, that all of life on Earth has been helped by these pollinators. The relationship, as Michael Pollan says in the film, like, bees are the legs of plants. Flowers have seduced bees into doing the work to kind of, like, to spread their genetics, so to speak. And so they've taken this sweet nectar, and they take it back and create this amazing creation called honey that all cultures in the past used to worship. That is, the Egyptians had it in their tombs, and the Mayans, you see images of them holding up a bee and the shamans worshiping it. You really get that we have lost that sacredness and that disconnect with nature, and
sure,
we're going to get it back.
Well, I did think that that was, again, part of the beauty of your film, is the message of the film, I thought was very powerful, that, yeah, there are pretty simple methods, you know, to do it the way nature intended. Listen, you know, don't try and fix what's not broken.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that the critics, you know, even the New York Times, it's on the best critic list, from the New York Times critic list. So it's really exciting to see it come out in New York City, see it come out in L.A. and across the country. And Queen of the Sun, you know, I think it's being pollinated around the world.
Well, I definitely... Now tell me, do you have a website for the film as well?
Yes, queenofthesun.com.
Okay.
And it's a great website, and there's some solutions of how people could help, like go and plant herbs. Let them go to seed, meaning flowers, so the bees could have some sweet nectar, and get your honey from a great, you know, beekeeper at the farmer's market, and buy local honey.
I'm going to buy some Australian honey after seeing your film.
Yes, that's really good.
Have you sampled honeys from around the world now?
Oh, all around. And
wow.
That's one of the most amazing things. It's, you know, tasting good wines is a really great thing, but tasting honey, it's like, how did it get so different? Some honeys, like in Australia, with like thick molasses, or in New Zealand, there's some called the Manuka honey, which is very famous, but that's from tea tree, and so it's just really like medicinal, and you take it in, and you know if you had a wound or a cut, you could just slab the honey over it, and it'll heal a lot faster than putting antibiotics on it. So.
Yeah, well, there are from your film and from what I've read, there are many healing properties to honey. And you know, one other thing, two other things I wanted to ask you. But tell me what you learned and what you came away from you of just the importance and significance, besides the intellectual significance of, you know, an ecosystem and respecting that ecosystem. It's something I think has been lost.
Yes, the ecosystem, in nature, we have to keep everything in balance. And here's, it's a very essential, you know, to save the pollinator. They are the canaries in the coal mine, and we need to protect the health of the bees so that we keep the ecosystems in check. So it's very important to have ecosystems without pesticides, because as we know, the neonicotinoids from Bayer Aspirin, Bayer Company, is they've created such a toxic, dangerous pesticide that's really destroying all pollinators on Earth. And it's kind of ironic to see that these big agricultural systems have created things to kill the things that alive. So we need to counter this by, you know, supporting biodynamic farmers and organic farmers and, you know, food without pesticides. And a lot of people put pesticides on their lawn, or their, you know, just these companies that says, you know, to kill lots of insects by this product, and you see it all the time. Well, we're just killing more and more pollinators that keep us alive too.
And then what did you learn about yourself making this film?
That nature really surprises me. That it's more rich and more divine than I ever knew until I encountered bees. And bees are something that woke me up in a very big way, because there's something very magical about how they live in a hive as a community. They're always giving back to nature, and they're always giving to their beehive, which consists of about 30,000 bees. And I feel like they're always in service. And I started feeling like, well, that's my act. That's why I make these documentaries. I want to be in service. And I learn from the bees, and therefore it comes back to me in a very in a way, so I don't have to deal with my ego. I can just deal with, well, let's save the bees. And so it's refreshing to just do something that I focused on for 100% for 3 years. And it wasn't like, oh, you know, I got to make that fiction film. I was just like, no, I got to help save honeybees.
The film is called Queen of the Sun. The director is Taggart Siegel. And Taggart, I have to tell you, you are an anthropologist. You definitely are. I mean, that's what you're doing. But it's great, and I highly, highly suggest seeing it. And I thank you for taking the time, Taggart.
Thank you so much.
All right. And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. And that was an interview with Taggart Siegel, who's the director of the new film, Queen of the Sun. And I have to say, I can't stress anymore that it's really an important film to see. It's a situation to be aware of, and, you know, it may inspire you to do any number of things, you know, hopefully. And beekeeping is now legal in New York. It wasn't
5 years ago. I don't know if you know that. But the situation with the bees has increased to the point where such things are now legal. Life is like science fiction. And Elena, what have you had to say? Do you care about the bees?
I do care about the bees.
Okay. I wanted to make sure.
As long as they're not in my apartment.
That's right. And
along with the roaches.
I'm wearing yellow and black just to be in communion with the bees. Chris, what do you think?
It was great. My neighbor has he's a beekeeper, and he has a bunch of bees on my property. So.
Does he feed them corn syrup?
Pretty wild. Pretty wild, because all of a sudden now there's like, because he only had them there about 2 years now, and all of a sudden there's this like big ass bees flying like around.
Oh my god!
Like big bees. You know what I mean? I've never had them before. Cause I guess he brought them up from North Carolina, and man,
they're having there's
and
a
all
whole...
the apples in the orchard, my apple orchard, all the apples now is like the trees are just like rustling. Like last year was unbelievable the amount of apples.
Chris, did you get stung?
No, you get stung. Bees don't really.
No, they don't really sting.
They don't really sting.
They're doing that. Bees are really loud and really big. That's all I can tell you.
Just don't swat at them. Don't try.
No, I don't. You know.
All right. Well, you're tuned to Listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI. This is Night Shift. We have a lot of ground to cover here. I'm going to go back to the zipper, which I was telling you about. And you at home, wherever you are, you can look at your zipper and see if it says YKK. And here's why.
Yeah, you know what I did? You know, you were telling me about the zipper, right? And
so
then
you,
I broke the zipper.
You broke the zipper. Well, there
now
it is.
Now what do I do?
You just dial YKK. All right, here's the deal. And you'll notice, if you look through 10 zippers in your house, you'll notice probably 7,
out
8
of 10.
Out of 10
mm-hmm.
will be YKK. And here's why. YKK stands for Yoshida Kogoyo Kabushikashikaya. I can't say that at all. But at any rate, in 1934, Tadao Yoshida founded this company, and it's translated the Yoshida Industries Limited. This company is now the world's foremost zipper manufacturer, making about 90% of all zippers.
Wow.
Now, even if it doesn't say YKK, they probably made it. Is what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
and it says here,
some
manufacturers put their brand on. No word if they make, and that says there, they have 206 facilities in 52 countries. In fact, they not only make the zippers, they also make the machines that make the zippers. No word on if they make the machines that make the parts that make the machines that make the zippers. But the largest factory is in Georgia. They make over 7 million zippers
Georgia,
per day.
Georgia in this
wow.
country?
That's correct.
As opposed to Russia?
That is correct.
Wow.
In any event, Mr. Shida's company zipped to number one by practicing the cycle of goodness, as he called it. Namely, no one prospers unless he renders benefit to others. Using this principle, he endeavored to create the best zippers out there that would hold up over long periods of time in the end product. This, in turn, would benefit both the manufacturers who use the zippers and the end customer. Because of these things, benefit his company, the higher and repeat and referral sales, thus completing the cycle of goodness.
Well, you know, you think about it, zippers haven't changed that much in like a long time since we were children.
It's
like
efficient.
That's the business to be in. That hasn't, you know,
90%
elevated or moved. It's just been the same.
90%.
No one prospers. Say that.
There it is. No one prospers unless he renders benefit to others.
So, Mike, how
there
come you
is.
Never
no,
use
sounds
your
very
zipper?
Buddhist.
There okay. it is. There's the night shift.
There it is.
There's so many Hold times when Mike doesn't have his zipper up.
We need you to talk to
I'm
Mr. Yagashima.
Hello, you're on the air.
And tell him to
Who's
fix
here?
Your zipper, Mr.
Hello, you're on the air. Who is this? Hello.
Yeah, good morning, all.
This is Monroe.
Yeah, listen, I saw a bee on 57th Street and Broadway, would you believe it?
Yeah, well, they had a swarm over there a week ago. Did you hear about the swarm on 57th Street?
Did you? Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
You mean a movie with Brian Keith?
A swan?
No, the swarm. There was a swarm on
57th Street. Oh, there was a
swarm? Oh, I thought about the Irwin Allen movie.
About a week ago.
But the point is, there was just this one bee.
Jerry Goldsmith's school.
And he was going from one little flower, yellow flower, to another.
And you started
another.
To chase him. You chased him.
And I was reminded, for instance, I once saw a hummingbird out in Jamaica, Queens. And, I mean, they also pollinate. Are you familiar?
Yes, I am familiar. There are a few pollinators here on Earth. These are the main ones.
You know, hummingbirds.
But, you know, hummingbirds cannot take over in any way, shape, or form what bees can do.
But the thing is, you know, you remember, and Mitch Cohn of the WBAI-LSP, he's with a group, or was, that's against spraying. And that spraying, I think, has had a major effect.
Yes, you should see the documentary. They cover that.
I know,
too.
But you know what gets me is what happens the heredity of, for instance, if a farmer has one kind of apple, you know, like a red apple, and then there's other trees that have green apples.
Listen, Monroe.
Yeah.
See the documentary and then come back because they talk about monocultures, and you'll get all that. Okay, thank you.
See, we don't need a document. We just talk to Monroe.
Monroe is a document.
He knows it all.
Unto himself.
Yes, you know, Monroe is Monroe.
I do have a theme for this morning, but Elena, and I have there's a lot of stuff coming out on DVD.
What's the theme?
I'm going to tell you the theme in a minute. But I have tickets to give away for both Green Lantern and... I have tickets, and you should go soon because it didn't do too well last week. The Art of Getting By with Freddie Highmore, Emma Roberts. You know about this? Do you care? Do you want to see? Any Monday through Thursday. Come on down to 120 Wall Street. Come to the 10th floor and get your passes.
Oh, yeah, I read the New York Times review.
Art of Getting By.
It got a decent review.
Yes, it did. But, you know, not every film connects with audiences. More and more small films are hard to market because they don't stay behind them, the studios. And theater owners, you know... If a film doesn't make money the first week, there's no point in them keeping it because they have to give so much of the split to the studio. So, there it is.
I always think of like it's a high-stakes business, you know, because every movie costs millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. That's a lot of money for a movie that just sees the light of day for a couple of weeks or half a week and it's gone.
Well, never a half a week, but definitely a week. But so we have passes here at the station, 120 Wall Street. It stars Freddie Highmore, Emma Roberts, is Julia Roberts' niece. And
in that case.
Yeah, there it is. The Art of Getting By. It was official selection of the Sundance Film Festival. Any theater, beginning yesterday, any movie theater, any AMC theater in Manhattan, you can see this at.
I want to see a movie with Samuel Jackson's nephew. Gotta be good, right?
You're a stupid fool. No, Emma Roberts, that's how some people know who she is.
Last week, Byron said that you spend most of your time on Facebook.
He did?
Byron said this about Keith?
Yeah, you were there, too.
No, I wasn't there.
Keith no, you, Keith, you weren't there, but Mike was there. That's what Byron's
Facebook.
Saying.
He's making fun
he's
of me
one
because
of those people.
I live a very socially active
yes.
life.
Yeah, he says you never online. Get off of Facebook.
Well, can you teach me how to use it? I have no idea what the heck is going on.
Get with the program, everybody.
And if
you
one
know,
more,
get with the in crowd.
If one more person tells me, get on Facebook.
Can I tell you something? Maybe it's just me.
I know you're going to insult me, but go ahead.
No, I'm not going to insult you, but I'll be honest with you. Okay. I really can't stand Facebook. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, have you ever been on Facebook?
Yes, well, yeah, obviously, because you're my friend. But you know, I can't stand Facebook. Everybody's got to have something. Someone has something to say. You know, everyone's
got to. Well,
we
did a show about this,
day.
Chris. We did a show about this. Remember, pet peeves of social networking.
Yeah.
Okay. Calm yourself now. Save it for
where
that
was
show.
I? Because I agree with Chris.
What I particularly hate, let me tell you what I hate. I hate people who post on your wall, hey, Mike, how's it going? How did that operation go? It's like, you know, why not just send me an email, even within Facebook? I don't understand.
I never use it.
Why do
way,
I want to have a conversation in front of my...
Mike,
a lot
let me
of people
interrupt
do
you just like you interrupted me.
Yes.
We did a show about this already. Okay?
Yes, we did. Thank you.
No,
all right.
It bears repeating.
Do you know what's on Blu-ray now, Chris?
No, but continue with your agenda, and I'll just be quiet.
Okay.
Go ahead, and you just do your show, and I'll just sit here.
Poor Chris.
Okay?
So I love you, Chris.
When you figure out what doing radio really is, or if somebody can call in and concur with me.
Someone call in and concur with Chris.
Concur that, like, radio...
That radio is never interrupting Chris. That's what it is.
No, man.
Basically, good radio... He's never interrupting Chris.
No.
One of my favorite Clint Eastwoods is on Blu-ray, so I have to mention it. The Outlaw
Josie Wales.
The Outlaw Josie Wales on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It's so great. And they have extra stuff. They have like a new Clint Eastwood's West documentary. with, they talked to everybody, Morgan Freeman and Kevin Costner. And Morgan Freeman.
But he wasn't in it.
No, this is a documentary. Clint Eastwood's West.
Oh, just in general.
Yes, talk about how great he is.
Is anybody still living that was in Outlaw? Outlaw Josie Wells.
Anybody still living? That well, in the,
Chief
I have,
Dan George. He's
no, Chief Dan George is gone, but the squaw, she's in it. She's alive. She's in the documentary in there. So I mean, nice. I've seen every Clint Eastwood movie. Not every.
That's
Clint
one of his top 10 movies.
All my favorites. One of his top. I've seen movies. All the special things, but
I would put
say,
that
looks fantastic.
I would put that barely under Unforgiven. I think that's a great.
I might actually like it better than Unforgiven. I'm not
really?
Sure. Some people.
Which
do.
One?
Outlook, Elaine is like, what show?
Shut up.
Really? What show? Okay. Outlaw Josie Wales.
Calvin
Show.
I haven't
seen that.
Never saw that one. It's a great Clint Eastwood Western. Also, you know what comes out tomorrow on DVD and Blu-ray? Really good. There were three great films at the beginning of the first quarter of the year. The Source Code.
Yes, I liked it.
Limitless.
I liked it.
And The Adjustment Bureau. Did you see that?
That I never considered.
Adjustment Bureau comes out tomorrow. It's excellent. I've seen it now three times. Okay.
The other two I loved. That would have
and
been
I really
to
liked
through.
It. Which?
I think I'm having like Matt
which
Damon.
Which you never really got
like,
what are you talking about?
The other two films you just mentioned. Source Code and yes. What was the other one?
What show
I
is
did
this?
Hear what you said.
You
I
did
just,
not. Limitless. You just went out. Limitless, yes.
Limitless. Yeah, we talked about Limitless. I told you I liked it. But I could not get into Justin Bieber for some reason.
Did you see it?
Yes, I did.
But you couldn't get into it.
I watched parts of it, but I didn't watch the whole thing.
It's a great movie. You're a fool. Have you seen it, Elena?
No, I haven't.
Don't be a fool like Chris. I mean like Keith. Sorry.
You're slightly off.
Don't be a fool.
A little off, but it's okay.
All right, so, Elena, you have a story?
Yes. Speaking of bees, let's talk about snakes. Have you heard about this story?
Mm-mm.
It's in Idaho. They slithered behind the walls at night and released foul-smelling musk into the drinking water, and they were so numerous that Ben Sessions once killed 42 snakes in a single day. Shortly after buying their dream home, Sessions and his wife discovered it was infested with thousands of garter snakes.
Wait, who and his wife?
Sessions, that's his last name. Okay. For the next 3 months, their growing family lived as if in a horror movie.
What with the growing what?
Growing family.
Okay.
More than a year after they abandoned the property, the home briefly went back on the market, and they fear it could someday attract another unsuspecting buyer. But the young couple soon learned they would be sharing...
Unsuspecting what?
Huh?
Let's just do this all night. I like it.
But the young couple soon learned they would be sharing the home with reptiles at least 2 feet long that had crawled into seemingly every crevice. Could you imagine?
Crawled into what?
It's creepy.
Shut up. While setting up a chicken coop, Sessions, his last name, lifted a piece of sheet metal and was startled to see...
What state is this?
Idaho.
Idaho.
Was startled to see a pair of snakes slither away.
I saw a snake when I was setting up the chicken coop.
A few days later, he found more
snakes
and soon
plane.
Started to collect dozens in buckets. At times, there were so many
buckets?
In the yard that the grass seemed to move.
Now, nightmare. Where were these snakes coming
nightmare.
From?
Nightmare.
They were all into the crevices.
What do they live in? Crevice City? What do you mean all into the crevices?
That's the fascination with the story. They're all in the house. They couldn't get rid of them. No matter how many traps they set up, no matter how many he killed.
Traps, snake traps. What's a snake trap? Can you get that on, like, eBay? Chris.
Probably.
Well, what are snake traps going for? What are snake traps going right now?
If he wrapped a stick around the roof overhang, he could hear dozens scatter, their scales sliding against the aluminum.
Look,
after he removed some panels of siding, dozens of snakes popped out. When he made his way through the crawl space to investigate further, he found snakes everywhere. That's when he realized his family was probably living atop a garter snake den where the non-poisonous reptiles congregate in the fall and winter. Sessions, the last name, quickly developed a snake fighting routine. Before his pregnant wife and two small boys got out of bed, He would do a morning sweep through the house to make sure none of the snakes had gotten inside.
Or he could move.
Or, yeah. But it was their first house, and they were really young.
Yeah, so
one day, his wife screamed from the laundry room where she had almost stepped on one. She said she was terrified and was going to miscarry.
Oh. That's not something. Well, maybe that snake went, you know, where?
No, that's what the husband's for.
You all are disturbing.
But because of the...
Well, this story is disturbing. I'm getting creeped out
later.
Here.
I'll later. Okay. What's the...
The moral of the story?
Could you,
bottom line of the story? I'm listening. I'm with you.
Can you just envision buying your first house? And your wife is pregnant with her third child, and all you have is snakes crawling around. Like, we all are upset about bugs and rats. And
well, they're non-biting snakes, though.
There's like
but do you want one slithering across your neck?
Yeah,
there's like 30 different snake traps on eBay.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
See?
30 different snake traps. Like,
yeah,
do they have brand names?
A lot of them have glue. This one is giant rat snake glue trap.
Rat snake glue trap. Now, what's a rat snake?
A giant rat snake. I guess a snake that eats rats that size.
Ew.
Wow.
And then there's,
rat snake.
This is like,
rat
this is really.
Snake. But like.
This one's Panetheus black. Darkest, dark on, rare snake trap.
Okay, Parnethius Black. It's like they send you a vial of powder. Drop this powder.
It's like $50.
Snakes will disappear, you know.
Then
it's like
a spaceship,
the Parnethius 3.
Grief trap, which I don't know what, I guess that's for something else.
Damn.
I don't know, for catching snakes, but so forth and so on. And then they got someone selling shoes that look snake loafers that.
By the way, when you're done catching these snakes, make some shoes out of them.
You know,
so, Chris, what happened?
Yeah, that's right. Now, you see, they could have been enterprising.
How does the snake get in the trap? I mean, what's a trap?
Well, it doesn't say, but then they got
put a rat in there.
How about this one? Revenge
see,
rat
and snakes
glue trap.
In the house.
Revenge what?
Revenge rat snake glue trap.
Revenge rat snake glue trap.
So the snake has to do something to you first?
Collection of words that really don't add up to anything.
No.
So what, the snake just sticks to it and dies?
Oh, this one is the Vintage Matu He-Man Snake Mountain Neck.
I want any kind of a snake.
That's a movie.
I want a snake, my snake traps to say He-Man. You know?
It says here, Motu He-Man.
Motu.
What's that thing that he managed to say on the cartoon? By the power of something.
You know, I never watched He-Man.
Skeletor, you know, whatever.
Well, now I do have another interview. There's another film that's very interesting, and I have to tell you about it because do you know anything? Had you heard about they had made a flip cam movie? Had you heard about this flip cam movie? It was at Sundance. Well, there was a film that was a completely the whole film was shot on a flip camera. The flip camera, do you know what a flip camera is?
Yeah, it's a really inexpensive little tiny camera.
HD camera.
Right.
And it's a narrative. Here's the concept. It's two strangers in modern day Los Angeles, and they decide they're going to film each other as they get to know each other. Okay, complete strangers. And, you know, their friends kind of, like, think it's weird and whatnot. And because he happens to meet her in a...
Are they attracted to each other?
You wouldn't think so, but they have something that makes them attracted to each other. And but the thing about it is this a documentary or is this fiction? Is this... What is really the deal? And it's very interesting.
But there's been a lot of that, like Catfish. People saying that's not a documentary. Or...
Well, this is very interesting because it's kind of the kind of film where not everybody knows. Not everybody who's in it knows whether it's real or not. Because everybody in it is themselves.
Now, did you see this film?
Yes, I did.
How does it play on a large screen of flip camera?
It plays amazing on a large screen. That's what's so amazing.
Flip cameras are like, you can literally put them in the palm of your hand.
It's an HD camera. It's got a 720p. So it's pretty amazing. I mean, again, it's not, you know,
you know, CinemaScope, but it's pretty amazing. The resolution's pretty amazing, and you'd be surprised. But I did an interview with the director, and he's a very interesting guy, and it's an interesting take on what creates a film narrative and making a film. There's another
I'm not understanding. When you say director, he's not one of these two people.
He is. He's in it. That's how he directed it. Okay. He's in it. And what's interesting about it is that there's another film that I will talk about after that just came out, and it's called General Orders Number 9, and it's all about Georgia, the state of Georgia, and it's, you know, there's a great...
Zippers.
Yeah, exactly. The state of the capital, zipper capital of the world, and I'll come back to that, but I will just make that as a note that's interesting, Chris, and you will get a lot out of this because his narrative... And what he does, and he talks about some filmmakers that do what you've done with your film, and he gives a really good explanation as to why and how and why that would make sense to do. I'll let you hear the trailer, and then we'll go to the interview in a few minutes here on Listener Sponsored Radio.
To get to know you with my camera. My job is going to be to get to know you with my camera. And your job should be... to get to know me with your camera.
This is a real thing?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I have 10 minutes to get ready for my date.
Look at me. Both of you. 1, 2, 3.
Care of you.
I'll take care of you.
No, I'll take better care of you.
No, we have to really concentrate on showing people who we are, and that means we have to keep the camera pointed on us.
Yes, and I will as much as I possibly can, but you gotta stop saying that.
I know you're the director, but why can't I film what I want?
Not film what I want.
You think it's funny to film people?
I wasn't making any jokes.
I know what people do subconsciously. I know what they do through their body language and what they really intend. And it proves it here. It proves it.
Hi, sorry that I missed your call. Please leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
You never know what it really is.
Yeah, of course. Take this one.
It's called communication. It's the foundations of all relationships. If you can't communicate, you can't have a relationship. Because if you don't, it'll end in chaos. From the chaos that it started from.
I would like to make sure that when we do this, that there's a purpose to do this. I think that if we make something...
So now this isn't my project anymore. Now this is our project.
I would like very much for it to be that way.
You're tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI, and I'm speaking with David Guy Levy, who is the director and co-conspirator of a new film called A Love Affair of Sorts. David, welcome to WBAI.
Oh, thank you.
When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
It was probably 1985, and Back to the Future came out.
Okay.
And immediately following, I just knew that's what I was going to be doing. And even though this isn't a time travel movie, it is definitely the first step in that direction.
Playing with reality.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
okay. And to you, what makes a good story? Like, what are the things that draw you to a story that will be the favorite kinds of stories that you like to see and that you want to make?
Well, I could go in a million different ways. I've been producing for a lot longer than I have been directing. And anyone who looked at my producing work would see that almost every film is completely different than the last.
I did notice that.
Yeah. I find stories that just keep me guessing, normally keep me interested and want to get involved in something. It could be a conventional story that we've all heard a million times before, but the fact that I still don't know what's going to happen next is very key. I always find myself very disinterested when I can imagine what can happen next, and then, of course, it happens, and then I realize I didn't like that movie.
I know exactly what you mean. And for you, what was the first opportunity you had to produce, and did you know then that you're definitely in the business you need to be in?
Yeah, well, I sort of had two first opportunities. The first one, I was at film school, and I'd been working with a fellow student shooting in between his home country of Bolivia and Ithaca, where we went to college, and we would literally take the equipment from the school's equipment cage all the way down to Bolivia, even though we told them it wasn't leaving town for the weekend, and then and shoot, and then come right back. And it was very ambitious. It was split screen, bilingual, subtitled, five stories interwoven, and it was appreciated at the right places.
Okay.
At festival plays, and that led me to my next first opportunity, which was a film called Lying, and it was a low-budget film. We had about $150,000, and we had Chloe Sevigny, Jenna Malone, and Lily Sobieski, and they all wanted to just improvise a movie in the woods. So, not having really much experience besides this film I had made in film school, and being right out of school, I sort of just jumped on the chance and went to upstate New York with them, and over 15 days sort of sculpted this movie with a great director by the name of Ann Blash.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just knew after making it, even though critically it wasn't the most beloved film, I was very proud of that experience and that I wanted to continue doing it.
All right. Well, I think when you view an artist's work, especially if you view enough of it, view or listen to or watch whatever the artist is, you get to kind of know them a little bit. So I feel like I know you a little bit. And my question to you now is, a movie like this, what was the impetus, and what do you feel? And there's a two-part question. What was the impetus to this, and what do you feel it tells you now that you've made it about you?
What does it tell me about me? That I can be selfish. Because I don't, you know, your list most likely haven't seen the movie as of yet, which is why I'm here.
Right.
And so in this film, there's an actress played by the wonderful Lily Bourdon, who came onto the project trusting me implicitly, and rightly so at times, and then at other times I would do things or say things that weren't exactly the truth, just because I knew it would give me the reaction I wanted. And half of that being sort of one of the sub-stories in the film, because there's so many threads in this movie, and one of the threads was that as a filmmaker, I was hitting on her the whole time. And
right.
I wanted to have her really think that this was something sketchy. And so I learned about myself that I was okay with doing it. And then, I forgot the first part, the impetus.
Yeah, what was the impetus to this, and, you know, how to develop? I mean, because
yeah.
I'm aware you're using, not only is it a very interesting and original narrative, but you're also using a new technology with it.
Well, the original idea came, I was just sitting around, like I think almost anyone is when I come up with an idea, and I was just thinking how great it would be to watch a movie about, two people falling in love, and if they just had the patience to film it. And that was the first thought. And then, you know, over the next few days, I thought, well, why not? You know, maybe put an ad on Craigslist. Did you just meet somebody? Do you want to make movies? You know, and as a producer, I was thinking about just putting the situation together.
Right.
And then a couple of realities started to come to light. One being, no one who isn't in film would really want to do that.
Right.
Film themselves as they're getting to know somebody. They'd rather get to know somebody. But the idea originally was, give these two newly connected lovers flip cameras, and just, since they're so unobtrusive and out of the way, and let them set them down around them and just sort of document that sort of new relationship forming. And then I realized that as a director, and you can't really keep control of that environment. People would eventually turn off the cameras, stop making anything, shooting anything that's interesting, guard themselves. There's a movie, Cinema Verite, which talked about that family in the 70s. I'm blanking on their name, but they, you know, they were very wary of what was being filmed. And so I realized pretty quickly, sort of to my detriment, that I would need to be the guy in that equation.
Okay.
And
okay.
So I knew that I would be filming it, and then I realized, you know, it would have to be a piece of fiction, because I already had an agenda, and I did not have a girl to shoot with. So it wasn't going to be me falling in love with a girl, but it was going to be the original concept. And then I realized I wanted to sort of mesh real life with fiction. Borat does that comedically, and I feel like I sort of did this dramatically, where some of the things are actual people reacting. One of the characters in the film didn't know it was a fiction until after we had stopped shooting, and I told him, by the way, that was all fake. And his name's Jonathan, and he's sort of a comedic bouncing board for my character in the film. And in order to have this sort of that sort of situation, I had to play a version of myself, so I used my same name. I shot in my same house that I live in, and I sort of let people think that I was me. And then when I knew that the girl would have to be someone that none of my friends knew, and that was most likely someone I didn't know. And then at a Christmas party, I met this person, and after talking with them, I realized that they were available to shoot, and they were eager to shoot, and they were sort of down to get into trouble, like they were willing to take risks. And so immediately, starting the next night, we started going to Christmas parties in character. I would go as myself, and she went as this character she created with the name of Ency. And I went to actually a film screening the next night, and to the party afterwards, and everyone started commenting, "Oh, David, what a beautiful girlfriend!" Blah blah blah. I just had to go with it, and it wasn't until like a month later I got to tell everybody that was in fact someone completely different.
Wow, that's great for an actress as well.
Oh, yeah, and then we started shooting about a week after we were just in character, and then so she and I had this idea to just make a story about these two people. And then about 2 or 3 days into it, we realized a lot of interesting things were happening off camera. And so we started to shoot those things. And then I realized that same night that could be turned into fiction as well. While she would think the off-camera scenes were exciting and good supplemental footage to the film, I could still sort of feed her information and keep it on some sort of level fictitious. Ethically, that was a fine line to walk, and the stuff that I think that we ultimately put in the film that people might have take issue with was stuff that was shot for the narrative.
Right.
She wasn't being lied to for this, for that. There's like a scene when we're intimate in a bedroom together, and that was for the characters doing the movie within the movie, so I didn't feel too bad about that because she knew that it was for the film, and it wasn't sort of lying to her and taking advantage of her in that way. But there were other things, like I would ask her out, and then she'd say no, and then I'd keep asking her out. And after she started taking a video journal, she would complain about that, and it just made for really compelling footage. So we put that in, and then I sort of liked the idea of, you know, stuff that Lynch had done in the past, with, like movies like Mulholland Drive, where he, I think, and you know, he never explained it, but I think he made a movie that he liked to take out some of the pins and let the machine come off of its gears and let the movie sort of not make any narrative sense by the end of it.
Gotcha.
And I sort of did that a little with this. I sort of let like the chaos ensue towards the end of the film, and I think all the different threads start to come out, and people are unsure of what's happening and what's real and what's not.
Well, I think it only added to the whole, you know, surreality of the narrative as well. Yeah. You know, to me, a lot of today's quote-unquote reality shows, to me, seem the whole idea that they're out there seems surreal to me. So.
Oh, yeah. And this was also another thing that helped in the genesis was my editor. His name's Azazel Jacobs, and he's actually got a film opening up just a week after this one that I helped him produce, which is called Terry. And we were sitting around. We had just finished development of the script, and the whole team was coming together, and we realized we had this time. And he said he'd edit the film, and then we started talking about it, and we were talking about, you know, reality film, but also these old movies that sort of explored the same issues. There's a movie called Blow Up. There's a movie,
of course.
And there's a movie called David Holdman's Diary that a lot of people don't know.
Okay.
But it's about this guy back, you know, before digital film, so it was a lot harder and definitely a lot more ambitious, who just documented everything on film and just to expose real life on film and also going back to the cinema verite experience, you know. All these things, and we just would sit back and think about this and then say, how could we get this into the film? And Aza would then be like, well, why don't you start doing video journals? And that's how that came to be.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, because you have all those different narrative elements, it becomes it adds a lot of texture to the film because, you know, and again, as a film critic, I have a tendency to, I don't want to know anything about a movie. I don't read any of the press notes. I don't see the trailers. So when I come into a movie, you just take me wherever you're going to go, and that's the
very
great
refreshing.
Well, I used to love trailers, let me tell you. Yeah. But I hate the feeling of sitting in a movie and waiting for everything I don't know that's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So and your movie is the perfect movie for that because you sit watching, you're like, okay, you know, all I know is that it was shot on a flip camera. And you definitely, if you're a film lover and if you love stories, you've got a great story.
Thank you. And you know, one thing I really loved about this experience was that for the concept, you know, having myself, Lily, and then the camera also being the third character in the room, there wasn't much I needed to ask permission for. There weren't producing partners, there weren't, you know, distributors. This was just, it was a formal exercise in filmmaking. And so I got to go with it and I'm just actually happy that it's actually going to get some attention. I showed it to our distributor, this wonderful man named Mark Ehrman, who's putting it out to his company, Paladin, and he just got it, and he knew I wasn't reaching out, trying to be extremely commercial with it. I was just trying to make an artistic expression with this movie, and he found a way to just get it out into the world without saying, look, we're trying to do something amazing. We're just trying to be who we are. And this is a film made by someone, me, who just had the chance to not have to sell out to a commercial story and a traditional narrative and just explore, you know, those storylines, the actual art of filmmaking. And even though it's on lo-fi flip cameras, I think that just adds to the whole experience, you know.
Well, I 150% agree. So, and the film is called A Love Affair of Sorts, and it actually comes out on the 24th, right, this Friday.
It does, yeah. And it's going to be playing in New York and L.A. first. And yeah. I think in New York it's at the Quad.
Yes, it is.
Check it out. I think it's 1 week only at the Quad, so if you can make it in the first week, go for it.
Okay, and do you have a website for this, too?
Facebook.com/aloveaffair.
Okay. There it is. And wow, look at that. There's really no need to have a regular website anymore, is there?
Well, you know, and you have a lot of feedback from your audience.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Also, you know, this is a film that's sort of very contemporary, so why not use a contemporary service?
No, I agree 100%. And what's next for you?
I am actually 3 weeks away from shooting a much more ambitious as far as budget goes film that is a psychological thriller, and it's called Would You Rather, and we start shooting in 3 weeks. So
what?
I'm in official pre-production and casting nightmares and location nightmares and all the fun stuff that just makes what I do so great.
Well, I hope I get to have you come back.
I can't wait.
All right, man.
Thanks.
Tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio.
Good interview.
WBAI. You enjoyed it?
Yeah, that was good.
What do you think, Chris? Did you like it?
I totally
you
understand.
Got it.
And
you totally
relate.
I know you do.
You know, I mean, because like I just pulled the pins out of my thing and let the narrative just, you know, I just, you know, all these things, and you know, what's amazing to me is that, you know, I made this film about the antique business, and now there's 25 shows, you know, TV, all about the antique business. It's hard being ahead of your time, brother. It's hard to be ahead of the curve.
There it is. So I thought I interviewed him and I thought of you.
Well, you know, he's right on in everything he's saying. I mean, he's exploring what filmmaking is about.
He's got quite a resume. He's produced quite a number of films. And he's the real deal.
Well, it's a different world. You don't have to be Stanley Kubrick anymore. You can make a
Definitely.
Film with a
you
camera
can.
That you've spent
right.
you spent 200 bucks for.
Exactly. You can create in this medium. The medium has become accessible for anybody. And that's what's beautiful.
You really can. I forgot what film just came out that literally could have. What did I just see recently? The blockbuster that could have been shot, low budget. The story was so good, and I can't remember what it was. It was just something in the last month that was really good that I saw. Ah, shoot.
Well, even that whole term, was it cinema verite?
Yes, cinema verite.
I mean, that has, like, gotten really popular. Just
well,
the
it
whole
is,
idea.
Is,
just,
it
I mean,
is.
Even the Bourne movies have that sense, you know, of the urgency and of time and place. You know,
well,
we
cinema verite has been... That essentially is what reality TV attempts to be. That's the whole
right.
gestalt of
exactly.
reality TV. So you are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI. This is Night Shift. You can visit us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can hear shows going back for the last 3 years and amuse yourself. We have all kinds of Life is Like Science Fiction articles there. We also are on Facebook, so please come and like us so we can...
Please like us.
Think that we have fans.
You like us. You really, really like us.
NITESHIFT, as in Tom.
As if you like Facebook. Some people don't.
Yeah, well, Chris, you don't need to join us on Facebook. But,
oh, okay.
Or
well,
you
I'm,
can email
I'm
us.
We like
already.
Facebook.
At lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com. Are you already no. friends with us on Facebook?
I'm honest, man. I think...
Chris is like, we're friends, you know, we're all friends.
We're friends.
He just doesn't like coming on
yes,
there.
He doesn't
a waste of time.
Hate the
Chris,
player, he hates the
my
game.
Friend.
Hello, you're on the air. Hello. Yes, hello.
Oh,
yes.
You know, when I noticed the bees started demise, do you remember the summer Juliana played the five burrow with the insecticide?
Yes, I do.
Right after that, you know, he killed thousands of different type of insects.
Yes, he did.
So... That was like a starting point for me.
Well, that's maybe a starting point for you to notice, but there's a global... I mean, when you see this movie...
Yeah, I know it's global now.
There's a million reasons why the bees are dying, and there are a number of reasons.
Well, you remember the film Mimic, you know? It's like that.
Yeah, I know. I'm with that. I'm with that.
Y'all have a good
Mimic.
Morning.
You too.
You
what's
too,
your name? Who is this, sir?
Oh, Chris and everybody.
Who is this?
Have a good night. Okay?
Who is this?
Where you going, man?
Hmm?
Where you going?
Where's the phone number over here?
You just got here,
Lane.
Man.
212-209-2900.
Keith, you have a story. You have a couple stories.
Oh, yeah.
We've got 30 minutes.
One of my
left.
Favorite Eschers.
Your favorite Eschers, huh?
One of my favorite Eschers is MC.
Yeah, why don't you make fun of him?
I just did.
No, the artist. MC Escher. When I was young in high school.
And do you remember discovering him in high school?
Yeah,
I totally remember discovering
him. Wow, does anybody know about this guy? Yeah, everybody.
Everybody, sure. MC Escher, he's very much known for... Well, you're doing the story. You tell what he's known for, Keith.
Well, he's known for doing these very intricate drawings that kind of... You know about him, right, Chris?
Yes.
Of course.
Well,
he's very famous. Let's describe him, Keith.
He's hard to describe. Well, you're a writer. Describe him!
It's very visual.
You've loved him his whole
life.
Very
visual. That's lame, Elena.
Well, yeah, it's like a very intricate labyrinth of images that kind of come together, puzzles, but, you know, visually. It's hard to describe, but very, very precise.
Okay.
Imagery.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
He's better than Elena's description. He's 180 degrees sort of left of what's his name? Is it Alien? Geiger, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like he's the equivalent of Geiger.
Like a mathematical Geiger?
Geiger. How do you say it?
Geiger.
It sort of fools your eye. You know, you look at what he does and you think, well, how can it work together? And
you can look at it at 3 in the morning and it's like the
most famous drawing is a drawing of the hand drawing itself, for those who may not know.
So go ahead. You should get online, though. Anybody who's interested
MC
in...
MC Escher. Spell Escher.
E-S-C-H-E-R. Brilliant.
There's got to be a like Escher. We'll like Escher on Night Shift.
There's a lot of fake Eschers, too.
So you pretty much just spend all your time just looking at one picture?
He does. He's still the same picture he's looking at.
And hang out on Facebook, both.
All right, but go ahead, Keith.
M.C. Escher, who died in 1972, is famous for using mechanical ideas in his art, drawing on concepts from symmetry and hyperbolic geometry to create complex tessellated images. Now an artist is continuing his work using mathematics that Escher never...
Continuing his work.
I sound like Bam Bam from Flintstones.
Continuing his work. Do you mean continuing?
Using mathematics
that too.
That Escher never had the chance to explore. San Lay, an engineer and artist based in Albuquerque, New Mexico, says that Escher's use of mathematics makes it easier for other artists to follow in his footsteps. No one has done Impressionism better than Monet or written symphonies better than Mozart or Beethoven. But because there is a mathematical component to this, it gives us an opportunity as artists to build upon the work and not just copy it, because there is so much new mathematics that has come along since Escher's day. Escher's tessellated images were based on periodic...
Tessellated, as in Tesla.
Meaning that you can slide a pattern in a certain direction and have it exactly overlay the original. Lay has created Escher-like images, but based them on a aporiotic
Penrose
tilings in which the patterns never repeat. You don't say that in normal conversation.
I do.
Do you have any Penrose tilings on you?
Yes, I do.
These can be constructed as the diagram below. Well, you don't have the diagram.
What color you want?
There are diagrams on this story that you cannot see.
Yes,
but believe me, they're great diagrams. Anyway, Penrose has invented a mathematical physicist, Roger Penrose.
He has a better chance of actually duplicating some of the artwork than reading
shortly
the story.
So basically what they're saying, if you don't understand what the story is saying, is that you can take some of his concepts, his drawings, and place them over a mathematical table and create a new chemical sort of art. Lay has rectified this by drawing intertwined human figures on Penrose tiles, producing an artwork that never repeats. So his work will go on forever.
Created a new form.
Endless amounts of
Escher-esque.
But I have to say,
there will be a Photoshop plugin.
But I have to say that pretty much any artist, if you were to do the same process, would probably create the same effect that every time you take,
like baking.
Sure, if you were to take even a squiggly drawing, you could probably keep...
Like baking. You have the same ingredients. You make the same thing you saw.
Remake it, move it around.
You could go somewhere, eat something delicious, right? Ask for the recipe, go home, make it home. Same thing.
But it could be that just the guy who wrote this article...
I can't even turn the microwave
on. Like the Escher recipe.
You get the Escher recipe.
So it's like...
Keith says, anybody can be an artist. You too can be an artist.
Tracing
paint by numbers. That's right. Yeah. With tracing paper. Okay. That is fascinating.
You know, I remembered what film could have been shot, low budget, and it could have worked.
What
the
film
was Hangover?
The Hangover's great.
You could have shot The Hangover
with
almost
a bunch
like
of
video cameras of this guy's of the story, because the story was good.
Yeah, but you had paid Mike Tyson and
well, obviously
and,
you had
Rent
Mike Tyson
the Tiger.
Added to it, but technically speaking, you could have shot a low budget.
No, I see where you're going. Actually, I think you're right. It might even have been a little edgier and maybe a little
might
more
have been a little
better.
A little edgier, but it could have worked.
A little more like better.
A mo better.
A little. It could have been a little more better.
It could have been a more better.
I think that it could have been a little more.
Yeah,
it could have been a little.
I think.
Wait a minute.
You know, I was
what
thinking,
about
you, Mike.
It?
I was watching.
I think
this
it could have been a little more better.
Terminal Velocity and Melvin Van Peebles was in it.
Yes, he is.
And I thought of you, and he's like, "Listen, man, I can't tell you anything." And he's just such a brilliant actor, and he was just great. I know he's a friend of yours.
Melvin's a character.
Speaking of Melvin, I was in the library the other day and I saw a graphic novel that he wrote.
Yes, he did. Wrote and drew. And drew.
But I couldn't make
heads or tails.
Heads or tails of the thing. It was like.
Buy it and sit down and read it.
Really?
I've read the script, yes. Lenny, you have another story? Where's the story about the flying deer?
I'm about to read that.
Yes, it's a fascinating story.
It better be more better.
I have a story about cows that make humanized milk.
Enough with the stories, for Christ. Can't we just talk for 5 minutes without any stories?
This is no, Elena. I want to hear Elena's story.
Doesn't everybody else have interesting things happen with them this week? That's
no.
Interesting to telling these damn stories?
No.
Well, I dreamt I was walking around with no pants on.
Well, there it is.
And no zipper.
But did you have any transgenic milk?
No, but I had a YKK zipper.
All right, we read the story.
All right. I'll read the deer one.
Okay.
If Chris will allow. But
no, go ahead. Do whatever you want. I think what's more interesting, I got something interesting to say. Hang on. I'll just put interesting.
All right.
So
go
I
ahead.
I get this thing in the mail, Mike, right, to join the Nelson ratings or the Nielsen ratings?
The Nelson ratings.
Actually, right.
All there's so a Columbia record.
The Nelson.
Right.
The
well,
Nelson
let me tell you
ratings.
What I did.
Penny.
So for 2 weeks, I
Admiral
wrote down
Nelson.
In my diary all the shows I watched. I actually made an event happen where they just put a full page ad in the Post today and took credit, and it's because I wrote how many times I watched this show. They just took it. They're considered number one in our age group, and they just related it to the Nielsen ratings. What do you think of that? That is amazing.
You're out of your mind.
Not that what I did was amazing, but that I could actually help change what people were watching.
Or cancel. So, you're going to show cancels.
Yeah, well, I didn't. Yeah, exactly.
So, Chris, can you give us some of the examples of the shows that you
Please.
Listed?
No.
I don't want to say.
Big Bang Theory?
You can't say.
Community?
I can't say, but if you get today, if you got yesterday's Post and you slip through it, you'll see the whole full page article.
You actually impacted that list.
I impacted this one show to say they were number one.
Is your name listed in the article?
No. It's listed as viewer.
So there.
Anonymous viewer.
Viewers, they gave him a plural. All right, go ahead, Elena. I want to hear about the flying deer.
That's actually, Chris, by the way, that's actually interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it? I think it's interesting. I couldn't believe it.
Can I read about the bikini first?
No, I want to hear about the flying deer.
Deer with wings caused power outage in Montana. A U.S. utilities company has identified the cause of a brief power outage in Montana as a deer with wings. Lee Bridges, who lived in the area affected by the power outage, was outside taking photos of an eagle, which had decided to perch in a tree near her home. They never came over here, and when it perched up in the tree, I thought I gotta get a picture and nobody's gonna believe me. When she returned to her house, she noticed that the power was down and Northwestern Energy crew was already working in the alley.
There was a deer perched in her tree.
She asked the workers what the problem was, and they jokingly pointed to the power lines above her head and said, "You see that? You got a deer with wings." It is thought that the eagle had bitten off more than it could chew and dropped the baby fawn shortly after swooping on it, remaining nearby to try and retrieve its prey. The workers who removed the carcass from the power line said he'd never seen anything like it.
So the eagle had snatched a baby deer.
And dropped it on the power line.
Dropped it on the power line, and the poor thing stood up there.
Mm-hmm.
until it died.
Yep.
That's horrible.
Yes, thank you for making me read this story.
He just brought us down, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Baby deer dies. Eagle attacks baby deer. All right, Keith, you read a story to offset that story. You have another story?
Yeah.
I think he's still worn out from the last story.
I can segue that. Mike, what did you do? What did you do this week that was interesting and fun? What was that?
I do nothing.
What did you do? Come on.
I do nothing.
He stood at a crack on the ceiling.
That's right.
What happened this week, Mike? What did you do?
Nothing.
Come on, talk to us.
I do nothing.
All right. You see, you don't want to share, man.
Well, you know, I lead a boring life.
No, you don't lead a boring life. Every day is exciting with you. If you were talking to me normally on the phone, you would be excited to tell me something.
Some interesting things are in the wind.
Well, what happened? What did you do? Well, who did you meet this week that was interesting, that you were surprised with?
Nobody.
I
interviewed Lucy Punch today.
Full of dog duty.
You know who Lucy Punch is? You will one day. She's really funny.
Who?
Okay, Keith, did you find your story?
Yeah.
Which story do you have there?
Jewish court sentences dog to death by stoning.
Okay.
Oh, there's another one of these...
Go ahead.
That'll cheer us up.
Go ahead. Explain this story.
Selected by Michael Sorge.
Gosh, good grief.
As its lawyer reincarnated. So that makes it a little better. Courts hear some strange cases, but this one takes the biscuit, perhaps literally. Paranoid judges at a strict Jewish court have sentenced a stray dog to death by stoning, as they believe it has possessed with the spirit of unruly ex-lawyer. The four-legged criminal came to the attention of the Monetary Affairs Court in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish neighborhood of Meir Shirim in Jerusalem when it wandered in off the street. After terrorizing the judges and plaintiffs, it then refused to leave the court, sparking a bizarre theory that it was the reincarnation of a lawyer who had insulted the court 20 years previously. During the lawyer's tirade, the court became so enraged it cursed him, so he would come back in another life as a dog. Canids are...
Wait a minute. They're like, oh, it's our curse come true. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. And by the way, I don't see any sighting of where this story came from. Mike made it up. Canids are considered...
I did not make it up.
Usually they say, like, from something news. This doesn't say...
It tells
like
you
blank.
Where. So I just cut it out when I printed it out.
Canids are considered impure by traditional Judaism. But with the curse supposedly coming back to haunt the court...
It came back as a cur.
The only punishment seen fit for local children to stone the creature to death. Local website, Unet,
they got the children to stone a dog to death.
That let the animals live. An animal welfare organization had filed the complaint that the police against the head of the court, Rabbi Avraham Dov Levin. However, he denies his sentence was ordered. Either way, the lucky pooch got away with it, whatever it was. He evaded capture and continues
to
roam free.
He's still at large.
So that is, now I'm happy.
And he's getting his own sitcom.
He's going to have a reality show.
Reality show sitcom, shot on a flip cam.
His name is Doggy Hauser.
The Jewish ghost dog.
Doggy Hauser, the Jewish ghost dog.
Voiced by, what's his name?
Hank Azaria. No, I don't know who does ghost dog. Oh, you mean,
the black guy, what's his name?
Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker.
He probably would do it.
As Doggy Hauser, the Jewish ghost dog.
Oh, that's so stupid. That's funny.
I know, like, where was this cited from, though? Like, the what?
Chris, do a link. What's the name of that story there?
The Wall Street Journal.
What's the name of the story, Chris?
Came out
read the title again, Keith.
New York Times. Jewish court sentences dog to death by stoning.
It. Put in Jewish dog, Jewish court sentences dog to death, Keith, Chris.
Michael Sargent Times.
Tell me what.
You want me to find that?
Yeah, tell Keith where he wants to know the source.
It's just some bold dokies, please. You made this up.
I did not.
Jewish
I
dog.
Exactly, I wrote it.
Jewish dog stoned to death. Let's find that.
No, not Jewish dog. Jewish dog.
That's what said. Jewish
no,
dog.
Jewish court. What does it say?
Jewish court sentences.
Oh no,
dog
I got
to
it.
Death.
I got it. There I got it. Jewish dog stoned to death.
A Jewish dog stoned to death.
A Jerusalem rabbinical
rabbinical court.
Rabbinical
yeah, but,
court.
Yeah, but what site? What is the site?
Montreal Gazette.
There it is, and it's picked up by a bunch of places.
And even the reincarnated part was
picked up in a bunch of different states. It's all over.
But
it's
the dog's
over.
Still alive.
It's
yeah?
a major
you know
story.
He's got his own. He's got his own Facebook site, and the dog is on YouTube.
That was the kind of world we made.
Possessed by a lawyer.
Exactly. Doggy Hauser.
I want to know where it originated. The Thailand Forum.
There it is.
Dog.com.
Well, that's my favorite source.
There it is.
Oh.
And they picked it up in Montreal.
You know what, Mike? There's like 25 pages of this thing.
Of course. I told you. It's a major story.
Poor dog.
Major story.
They wrote it right here. A bunch of Jewish rabbis.
The first page of...
A bunch of Jewish rabbis sentenced dog to death.
That's what it says.
That's good PR.
And then, you know, what's funny is all of a sudden, Wikipedia gets in there with stoning.
Of course. It's like, click on Wikipedia. Stoning, just so you don't, in case you didn't know. Throwing stones.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
It is. Life is like science
fiction. No, Mike, it
slow,
goes on and on. It's
slow
page
news
after
day.
Page after page.
It's got your page. I told you. Now, let me ask you a question, Alina.
Yes.
What about the bikinis?
Okay.
Do you want to know about the humanized cow milk?
All right, you can do that first.
Yeah, I'll do it quickly. Okay. Cows make humanized milk, but is it safe? Chinese researchers made headlines by genetically modifying a herd of 300 cattle to produce milk that is somewhat akin to human breast milk. Mm. The scientists inserted a human gene to the cow's genetic information, and the animal's mammary glands now imbue their milk with large quantities of lysozyme, a protein that is abundant in human milk, but not the bovine variety. Aside from giving the modified cow milk the strong, sweet taste that you may not remember from your infancy, the introduction of the lysozyme may make the milk much healthier and more nutritious, says Ning Li of China's Agricultural University in Beijing, who led the research. To help improve malnutrition among children, Li and his colleagues hope to get the modified milk through the testing phase and onto the Chinese market within 3 years.
Wow.
Now, it says here, initial research suggests that it is indeed safe and may provide a significant health benefits, experts say, but much more testing must be done and will be done before you see human cow milk on the market. That's what they say in the United States. Better gut bacteria. It says human milk has 1,600 times more lysosomes than cow and goat milk. That's what Elizabeth Maga, an animal scientist at the University of California, said along with Davis, that a team of researchers conducts similar research of Lee's group. The protein plays a big role in putting a good set of bacteria in the intestine. So there it is.
What's with this recent fascination with human breast milk? Didn't we just do a story about that before?
Nutrition.
Or the ice cream place in London.
Oh yeah,
they,
well, yeah. You know, people are. This is
breast,
the kind of
breast
world.
Ice cream milk.
This is life. On
oh, it says
21st
here,
century.
It says here where the story originated. The stoning story originated at the Left Shoe News.
There it is.
That's where it originated.
That's
Keith.
The source.
The Left Shoe News.
A very, very valued institution.
All right, tell me about bikinis, Elena.
Okay. Designer has created a solar-powered bikini.
What does that mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Chris, I know you know about this. Okay.
Of course he does.
A New York-based...
He gets alerts for bikini.
No, this is really relevant.
No, this is if you want to charge your phone.
Or iPod.
Stop.
Or your iPod.
Mm-hmm. Off your bikini.
Off your bikini I'm while you're out sunning.
I'm
New York-based designer has invented...
Is there a male version?
Almost.
For yeah. Man boobs.
Exactly.
No, there's a visor you can put on your hat that will charge your...
Not quite yet. But
iPod
you're right.
Hat charger. Keep reading, Elena.
Has invited a solar-powered bikini so wearers can charge their iPod or camera as they lie in the sun. Andrew Snyder, 30, sewed together 40 paper-thin photovoltaic panels together with soft...
Photovoltaic panels?
Yes. With soft conductive thread to produce his
soft
iKini.
Conductive thread?
Yes.
Mm. Which comes complete with USB ports sewn into the fabric. He told the International Business Times that he came up with the idea during a brainstorming session at New York University.
Over a bomb.
I don't really have anything exciting, so I leaned over to my friend and just jokingly said that I was going to make a bikini that could cool your beer at the beach. Didn't quite work, though, as Chris suggested.
Wait, a bikini that could cool your beer, so like you put it on like your mate?
But Chris is on to the right point. This is where they're going.
Okay.
He then decided there was some merit to the idea and started working on developing a prototype.
Solar-powered clothing. It's the future.
Before realizing there was an important stumbling block.
Yeah, I know you would throw that outfit on.
Exactly. Like, I want a solar-powered Kangol.
Can you imagine a bikini that could, like, generate more
human
milk?
No, but what's interesting is that if you actually were stuck out in the desert...
I want one that could power my laptop.
You could if you had some kind of a, you know, the...
A jetpack?
Yeah, I'd be like, honey, could I plug into your bikini?
If you were stuck out in the desert, you could survive.
I'd like to plug into your bikini, honey.
You know, with one of those devices that could recharge or anything you had with you, like whatever.
Yes,
cook with or something.
You have your girlfriend around. She's along to recharge you in every way.
Like survival technique. You know?
Unfortunately, the original bikini didn't have enough surface area to kick out the juice necessary to cool the beer.
So I downgraded
to a lower power device.
Mm.
I plugged it in my iPod and it worked.
Mm.
He is now selling the iKinis with prices ranging.
iKini.
From 300 to 900 pounds.
And is it in England?
Mm.
The iKini.
Well, this is written from the British tabloid.
So.
All
right, so then
but he's from New York.
He's from New York?
Mm-hmm.
Of course he is.
The designer
That's a New York hustle.
To go back to his original
idea. You don't need a
bikini
in London.
The iKini. Yes.
By developing shorts for men that can keep
He's working on shorts.
Clothes.
Eye shorts. Yes.
So that way...
I want eye boots. I like the boots. I like the idea, like, in the winter, I get to stick my phone down in my boot, charge it up while I'm sitting on the subway.
So if you three gentlemen...
You couldn't, because you wouldn't be in the sun.
Shh, you three gentlemen wore some trunks...
Once I was out.
And hey,
Speedos.
No, that's not enough
surface. How about like a detachable collar on your coat that charges up and you can stick, like, all your equipment in it?
What about sunglasses?
Charging sunglasses?
Two big...
No, but you need more. You need more area. You need like a big area.
You need some trunks.
Some trunks.
So you three guys need to wear some trunks, and y'all can have a whole cooler full of beer.
Oh, like a reflective Hawaiian shirt.
Maybe they could do it like, and they can make wigs out of them. They have fibers, like optic fibers that absorb the sun.
Big Afro wig.
Exactly. You can have like a sun weave.
But it might go up, you know, like a match.
I don't know if you want to track that much like heat to your head.
No, but then you plug it into like your earring, and then you just plug that down into your iPod. What do you say, Chris? I'll go in with you.
That'd be fun.
All right, hello, you're on the air. We've got a couple minutes left. Who is this?
You can improve your ability to speak. By repeating a sentence that will improve your objectivity.
Thank you.
Some people have a lot of time on their hands. In the middle of the night.
Keith, you have one more story?
Let me see here.
Now keep in mind,
Don't have another story, my friend.
I thought I gave you another story. No? All right. I just want to tell people that there are tickets here. You can come down to the station and get passes for free to go see any day, you know, and go quick because the movie didn't do too well. But it's a movie called The Art of Getting By. We've got pairs of tickets free. You can go any Monday through Thursday, any AMC theater in Manhattan you can go.
It's official selection of the Sundance Film Festival.
Official selection.
And it got decent reviews in New York Times.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it is.
Keith goes by New York Times. Everything it says, he believes.
Elena?
Yes?
You had another story? I saw you pulling something apart there.
The New York Times is most times accurate.
All right, I'll tell you what else is coming out. You know what's coming out on DVD tomorrow? Blu-ray? Unknown. Did you see that?
Oh, that's with the...
Liam Neeson is very good. Yeah.
That's the thing everybody thought was a remake of Taken, but wasn't.
Well, no, they thought it was a sequel to Taken, but he's really picked up the mantle for Harrison Ford, because this is the kind of film Harrison Ford would have completely starred in at one point in time.
Too old now.
Yeah, he's way too old.
Well, Liam Neeson's not exactly.
Actually, he's really good in Cowboys and Aliens.
At least 10-15 years younger.
Cowboys and Aliens. I mean, he's really good in.
You saw that, Chris?
Yes, I did.
When did you see it?
I saw it before Mike.
How'd you see it?
I'm not telling, but I saw it. It's actually really, really good. Oh, by the way, Mike, first episode of Fallen Skies, how did they give you reports on it? What did they say?
Well, you know, I've seen all seven episodes, so, you know, we did the review.
Did the review.
Did you watch it tonight?
Yeah, I saw the first episode, but, you know, when I watched it again, I got to see it a second time, and, you know, that last 2 minutes really hooks you.
Oh, definitely. That's a Battlestar Galactica trip.
Well, I came at you, young boy, girl, with no experience, and you're in here. We had our ups and downs, but I was
now, now.
All right. Now, I'm a big fan of, what's the show, Throne of Crowns?
Throne of Crowns.
You're talking
Game
about
of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
I'm sorry.
Throne of Crowns.
I've seen every episode. I love that show.
Did you read the books? I loaned them.
Screw the books.
Can I tell you something,
Keith? I think the show is great.
Did you notice this? A friend of mine noticed this. He said that, you know, they show full frontal.
Yeah.
And what he said to me is, he goes, you know, the guy was uncircumcised, and if it would have been true to form, the guy would not have been circumcised.
Oh, come on. That's, like, so
ridiculous.
That's what somebody pointed out to me.
Yeah, ask that guy. I wouldn't be alone with him in a beer.
He goes,
hello,
you know, I really enjoyed the full frontal, but, you know,
I really enjoyed
the
really
guy
enjoyed
was circumcised.
It. Hello,
I
you're
was
on the
like,
air.
What are you talking about?
Hello, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Okay, can you repeat the name of that movie again?
Which movie?
You said you're giving tickets away before?
It's called The Art of Getting By.
If you come down, you can get by with it.
You can get a free ticket, free pass. You pair,
yeah, free.
Pair tickets.
Okay,
120 Wall
down.
Street. Come down between 9 and 6 during the day.
Yeah, you going to come down?
Come on down.
I'm going to come down.
All right, now, also, email me. Here's the thing. Email me if you want to get free passes to go see any Monday through Thursday,
Green Lantern,
and I have the Green Lantern Xbox game. I give you a pair of tickets to see it for free, any theater, okay, Monday through Thursday.
What do you think of that,
And
man?
You get the Xbox. I only have 10 pairs.
What do you think of that, bro?
Just put Green Lantern. Hook me up.
Email you?
Email me. Life is like science fiction.
You may not get back.
Life is like science fiction at gmail.com. That's lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com.
Green Lantern, brother.
Let me ask you something, man. Did you get your DGM yet?
He didn't know the DGM.
My who?
He don't know what you're talking about. Don't listen to him.
What's your second question? Was you the guy who was promoting this music during the fundraiser?
Yeah,
that was me. That
was DGM.
Damn good music.
What's your name? Because I wanted to buy it, and I didn't have the money there, but I got
well,
the money.
Well, listen, there's another marathon coming up. There's another marathon coming up. Shh. My name is Mike Sargent, and the music is called Damn Good Music, DGM. That's right.
All right.
That was
I
me.
I want to get that. Okay.
All right. You was with it.
Yeah,
I'm going to have a new collection.
Put
next
that in
month.
The email.
New collection.
Yeah. Tell you want to get
it's for your bitch.
That's right.
Yo, keep up the good work, y'all.
Thank you.
And I'm going to email you.
All right, email me. Lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com. You can friend us or like us. Actually, like us on Facebook.
You may never hear from him, but go ahead.
That dude sound like, Iceberg Slim.
Yeah, Iceberg Slim.
Hold on.
Like us or hate us.
All one word. Lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com.
Life is like science fiction.
Life is like science
fiction. As laborious as that is.
And that's one word. @gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Over and over again.
And you can and like us on Facebook. NITESHIFT. Night Shift. This has been Night Shift. Should I go to our theme? I think I'll go to our theme to end out with before we go to Jimmy Dorn.
You know, I swear.
What?
Nothing.
The show is over. Show's over, Chris.
The show is over. Who wrote the theme?
It's over.
Whose theme music is that?
This is the Night Shift theme.
This is your music.
No, this is not me.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.